on Washington Street, and that part of Washington Street is no longer there. See, when you get down to Broadway or to the railroad track from Harrod Brothers, which is a funeral home up there, when you cross the street, Washington Street was the same width and run all the way to the Fort Hill. Completed Fort Hill, and that was Hill Street, you know.
Well, so did Estill own the peach tree, or did he?
Well, see, that's where John Foss owned when he got killed. Matter of fact, he intended to go to bed and had prepared to go to bed and had taken his pistol off. See, he carried a .45 automatic in his hip pocket.
Okay.
And he had gone up, and of course, see, he's met his grandfather. Ms. Foss is very religious.
Mm-hmm.
But John Foss was a handsome man, and he was a debonair. He was like Robin Hood, you know.
That's what I've heard him compared to, Robin Hood.
You would have to compare him to Robin Hood and Sherwood Forest, according to the people that he was around. There was an air about him that people respected, you know, and he demanded respect. When he walked down the street, everybody said, "There goes John Foss," if he walked. Of course, he had a Willis Knight, and he was probably the only guy that had a big car because he bootlegged. And well, they didn't call it bootlegging then, I don't think, but that's what
distiller.
He was. Because he ran a grocery at 701 Wilkinson Street. That's where he built. See, now this is where the tower sits.
Okay, now wait, let me understand, okay. But now, he had a grocery at the Peachtree site before he built?
No, yeah, well... Yeah, before. This is prior to Peachtree Inn, prior to getting in with these other women, see.
Okay.
That's when Meta Follows Him was young. Matter of fact, they one time lived down here. It's the next stoplight down where you turn back and you used to go by Hex, if you know where Riley Road is.
Riley Road, yeah.
On the left there was Betty's mother was born in that house, see. Mm-hmm. And, of course, that is probably at the turn of the century, see. And
Let me ask you a little bit about John Foss. I have it that he was born in 1879 in Jeffersonville, Indiana, and his parents were Ben and Annie Foss. Is that?
I don't really know his parents, but I think I know he had a sister named Mabel.
I've heard Granny say that his mother was a part Cherokee Indian.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. See, that's where he had high kind of, and he was a handsome boy guy. Yeah. This guy.
Oh yeah.
And he had black eyes and dark eyes, kind of high cheekbone. And he was. Now I remember these pictures of Miss Fulton him when they were probably 20 years old and hung on her wall.
Yeah,
and Vivian would see Bixie's section wife, Bixie. See, Miss Wallace named her children after, usually she was very religious, and after, like, Benjamin Franklin, after Benjamin, see?
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, John, everybody's John, but see, John Wallace was named John Russell.
Ah, okay.
This is John Richard.
I thought his name was John Russell.
Carlos Russell,
and then it was John Jr.
They could be wrong in that, see, that's a thing.
I think it's
Well, they do have a sort of a Robin Hood aspect about him, and I talked to my wife a little bit that he would help people who needed money or maybe food.
Oh, he would buy coal by the carload, see, and then he run this grocery, and he did do those kind of things, and he would, you know, people then, when they buy something, they would put it on a tab, you know, and never paid him, but it's all right. He would, if they were poor, he... Mm-hmm. Or he may, if they were destitute, it didn't matter whether they were black or white.
Mm-hmm.
He would send them coal or food, you know.
There's a story in that little handout I brought where a mountaineer comes down and is relocated to Frankfort, and one of his family members dies. And he has no money to bury this family member, and John gives him money to for the funeral.
I hadn't always lived in this area, but when I first moved over, I was probably 6 years old, but my grandmother lived next door to him. So he built that house at 701, he built 703, and he built 705, which was all one, and then the store was on the corner of Hill and Wilkinson Street, where the hill started. That's the beginning of Fort Hill, we call it, you know. You know Fort Hill, see, when you went into Washington Street, there was a road turned up, a little lane that you went up in horse and buggy days now, and Sandy Crean, Sandy Kring, K-R-I-N-G, had about four children. He lived on top of Fort Hill, right on the very crest. And he was a jailer a couple of times in Frankfort. And they was probably, it was Frida and James and Charles and...
So the Follis family, John and his wife, after they built those homes, then lived above the store?
Yeah, he lived over the store. That was part of it. Now, his residence was right over the store.
Okay.
And, of course, like I say, they bootlegged in those days, see. And I remember the old chimney, see, there was a store part. Is that picture she showed it to you?
Yeah.
Right there. That was a store. See, the house residence is up over there. See, you can see he kept a neat store. If you look,
see how neat. It's very well organized.
Uh-huh. Well, see, overhead, particularly to this end, right behind this was a storage area where he kept extra groceries.
Mm-hmm.
Then there was a garage where he could drive in the same building. And then there was another building back of that. It was storage. But he had a chimney in there where you could put a heater. But the chimney was not a chimney. It was basically because there was another chimney upstairs. But that's where he put his...
You could store things in that chimney, couldn't
you? Yes, sir. That chimney was built with... because I've seen the tank. It was built around, see? And that's where he could have it, where he could take... And he could fill up bottles or whatever he needed.
Did he actually brew his own?
No, he never brewed his own.
He got it
in Nelson County, I think.
Well, let me ask you, I've heard that besides grocery business, that he was a boat builder and a river man.
Oh, yeah.
And,
he faked suicide one time.
Yeah, the story I hear, and you can, is that he and his wife sort of got maybe a little crosswise.
Well, he was going to Ida Howard. That's what Ms. Follis calls her.
Uh-huh.
And she was a good-looking woman, but she was a lady of the town.
Oh.
And she's very religious, and she said that's, she called him a slink. Said, that slink ain't going to touch me after being with that old Ida Howard, you know. And she lived around, and she was a lady of the town, and she was a good-looking woman.
Yeah.
And I remember her very well, you know. And of course, the man, see, there's another child. If you don't have them all, Doug Follis is another one.
Ah, no, I don't believe I have.
I always call him illegitimate because he married Anna Mae Blackwell, who was Anna Mae Shearer. But she was probably the Sophia Loren of the time, see.
Ah.
She was that good-looking a woman. Matter of fact, when he go to bed that night he got killed, he had prepared to go up and go to bed. And he was in his shirt sleeves. Mm-hmm. And he had taken his gun out, and this guy come by on Rigsby from Lexington and wanted to play some cards, you know. And they said, of course, see, he shot Guy Wainscott. Shot his stomach, his liver into.
Well, that's what I heard, that there was a gun battle, and he was in the store, and the policeman, he must have shot three or four of them.
Yeah, he did. He killed one, but Guy Wainscott was a chief. But he was, at the time, he wasn't a chief.
Well, why were they coming for him? Was it because of the...
Well, they had some trouble with Carlos, one of the boys. They'd been a... Well, now you have to remember, before there was a Mayo Underwood school on the corner of Wilkinson and Miro.
Yeah.
But before that, there was a white school there.
Ah, okay.
See, there was another school, and I even went to that school. So as I know, to me, the Mayo Underwood was a new school, and this was a black school. They built particularly for the blacks. But in that yard was enough room that they could have a carnival and circus, see. And Carl's name was down there, and they got into a big fight with the carnival, and the police come out, and they even set John Paul's house, this thing, on fire.
Ah. Yeah,
and there was when we had the gun, that's where that gun battle came in.
Do you know
in.
What year that was when that gun battle?
It had to be like 28 or 26
the
or
late
28.
20s before he was
in
killed.
The 20s, and of course he got killed August of 29. See?
Mm-hmm. But I never understood why Rigsby shot him. What did he have against
him? Well, they said it was a clique with the police, because see, the policemen feared John Follis. And one, like they say, the king of Crow, that's what he was. He was a king of that section. He was like John Dillinger, or not John Dillinger, but Al Capone or somebody. But anyhow, he ruled the roost from Hill Street to Broadway and from the river to up to back of the old State House. See, with the old State House, see, they call the Capitol grounds up there the old Capitol.
Yeah.
The State House, yeah. All the old people call that the State House yard, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And even I did. They call the crawl section, they call it the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
That was the nickname.
When you say he's king, like if I wanted to sell bootleg whiskey or if I wanted to set up a gaming operation, I had to go to John Follis and get his permission?
Yeah, you probably worked under his rule. See, he was the king of the roost, and he got the best people he could get to run his bars. You know, now you couldn't sell whiskey then, I mean legal whiskey, but you could sell beer.
Mm-hmm.
See, they had beer like the old saloons back in the old days. I remember Ishmael and I used to go through there. See, I lived out the Lawrenceburg Road, but then we moved to town once. I lived in the country at Ball and I one time. We moved to town once, and we always got hooked up with the Fallises some way, you know. Fallis, they call them Fallis. I know it's they say Fallis and all that, but it's Fallis is the way they say it, but it's F-A-L-L-I-S.
Yes.
And we'd get in. I'd come to town, and I'd stay at their house a lot. But see, but John Follis was living up there with Anna May then, mm-hmm. and they had one child, like I told you, named Douglas, and he lives in, he's
Corbin,
in plastics, Corbin, Kentucky, and mm-hmm. he's got his own plastic shop, and he mm-hmm. comes here, and he needed some money, and he would, see, Bruce, our oldest son, runs the bank. Yeah, that's him.
And this one, I don't know.
You can see he's a debonair man.
He's a very handsome man, there's no question
sir.
About it. This would have been sometime probably in the early 20s, maybe.
I would say that's in the 20s, yeah. And he wore a little derby hat a lot, too, besides one like it. And he wore a suit a lot of times.
Somebody
so.
Touched this picture up. I like that one.
Now, that's a picture of him. That's a later one, I believe.
That's been hand-colored. You can see where they
somebody.
put in the red on his cheeks and done his lips.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, now that one is something like the one that she used to have on the wall, Vivian. And she had one of Ms. Follis when they were very young.
I think Marvin's got Grandpa's picture, but
yeah, Marvin. See, Bixie had four children
by first marriage,
and then
this is a picture of my mother.
Vendeline by another one.
There's
see,
one.
Now this is
but
her
that's
mother.
Not a real good picture, but it's all I got.
Yeah, Anna Lee was a good-looking girl, but she was only 24 when she got killed in a car wreck. You know, that is a good picture of Ann Lee, because I can remember, but Betty can't.
I was 16 when that was taken. That was up on Hill Street right by the house, but...
It'd give you something. This has to be in the 20s or 30s. 20s, I imagine.
Well, Mama died in 1932.
Grandpa died in 1932. Well, you can tell by the old car. See, that's a teenage car.
Yeah.
It's one of ours, so
yeah.
Well, they say that Mr. Follis used to run logs down the Kentucky River.
Yeah.
One of the things he was involved in.
I tell you, he was involved with baseball, too. He loved baseball.
Oh, really? I never heard this.
Well, I've seen pictures that he sponsored teams, you know, and who is it? Maybe was it Mary Rose has got these pictures? Of them.
I don't have any.
He would sponsor a team, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this had to be Willie Willis and Sam Hart. These people are all dead, but he sponsored baseball teams and he loved baseball.
Ah.
Yeah, see, he wasn't a bad guy. But the time he faked this, you talk about boat building, he blowed that thing up, see, with dynamite and put cow bones and everything else in there. And they was dragging for him and looking for him, see. They said, well, John Falls got blowed up down there. Well, he set it up because this was a shanty, but a lot of people lived on the river then.
But you say he did it because he and his wife had a problem.
They had this problem. The police was after him, see? And Judy, who is our daughter-in-law, her grandfather is the only guy who could come and get him. And he said that Orville Harrod could come get him without any gun or anything. Or he gave up to him, one matter of fact, after this was all over. He watched them drag for him. He's up on Fort Hill watching them.
Oh,
they were dragging for him, see. He'd blowed that up, and Miss, you know, they said, well, I don't think it was for any insurance. They were just to get him off of his
back.
They
say he went south and worked as a carpenter down in St. Charles, Louisiana. That's what's in this little handout. I don't know if that's true or not.
Well, I don't know about that, because, see, I know him in later years, and I remember when I was probably only two blocks from when he got killed when I was a kid, because I remember the headline says, John Fall is killed, and you can see
what did it call him? He was under
the King of Crow is dead.
Crow. Oh.
That's the way they said it.
Yeah.
The King of Crow.
Well, I heard a story where he was at a dance one time, and he had taken a shine to a young lady who was there and apparently irritated her escort. And this fella stepped up to him and they got a knife fight. And he stuck this guy a good one, and the fellow recovered, though. Had you heard anything?
I wonder who it was.
It's in there, isn't that?
Oh, yeah. It's in there.
Well,
apparently
that could be true. Now, he was in all kinds of battles, but he was a ladies' man, too. And Miss Fowler, since she's so religious, she wouldn't let him touch her. He'd come down, he didn't pay no bit of attention to her anyway. I've been there, and he'd come in and give her a big kiss, and she...
back away from
him. Oh, she didn't want him to, but I believe she did.
Yeah. What, you said she was a minister?
Well, yeah, she was very religious, you know, and she held her own. She'd hold meetings on corners, and in that store. She had them in the store that we're talking about, wherever that picture is. Anyhow, that very same store. See, she's had meetings in there with and sing, mm-hmm. and even had Betty sing, and she can really sing good, but this is when she's a little girl.
Well, your wife was telling me that somebody'd come up and ask Miss Falls to come pray.
Would go with anybody, and she was very prominent. Yeah, she mm-hmm. was a kind of a faith healer, you know, and all this
people
stuff.
People would send handkerchiefs.
Yeah, they for her to pray about. And
from other states.
Yeah,
oh, good.
She would write a lot of religious songs, and she was so religious. John Fowles wasn't about to live with her; she wasn't about to let him. But so he lives with Anna May, you know. And Anna May, see, she had had two children by Blackwell, and I knew Lewis and Marshall Blackwell, and she was a handsome woman.
So let me understand: he never divorced.
I don't think he did. That's the reason
he wasn't living with her, though.
He lived with the Peachtree Inn. See, he built this building, and this is a huge building. It's between Washington and Broadway and Clinton Street on Washington, right in the middle of the block.
That was the Peachtree.
That was the Peachtree Inn. See, next to the Peachtree Inn, you come down, and you got Elliot Gordon, who is a notorious guy. I don't know if you ever heard the word Elliot Gordon, but
no,
he run a liquor store. And he was notorious as John Follis.
No, I had not heard.
Then next door to that was, he ran a grocery too, like John Follis, and a liquor store, liquor store later when it became legal to be liquor stores, but he run saloons before that. They call them saloons, mm-hmm. you know. And the one on the corner of, on the corner of Clinton and Washington is the center of Crow, because that's where the water came up out of the sewers first. And they called, and that's where it got its Crow name, you know.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. I had some questions just about, I've heard the story, Crow got its name from crawdads. The water come up in the crawdads, get caught in the drains and everything.
Yeah,
you
could tell when the river's rising, it came up right on the corner, that corner first, out of the sewers.
The people who lived down there refer to it as Craw also? I mean, the residents of it, they would call it Craw, or did they?
Oh, yeah. They knew they were in Craw, and they called them Crawbats. That was their name. See, Cecil Powell got that. See, he lived down there one time. Now, Cecil Powell is a famous boxer, probably the best boxer Frankfurt's ever had. He just died this past summer. But anyhow, he would try to get all the Crawbats together, you know, anybody that ever lived there. And he said, we ought to elect a Crawbat queen. And I said, well, now, I don't worry no Bill Pullum, the pro golfer.
No, I don't.
And there's a Bill Pullum that played softball. But see, she was Ruby Ford. But she lived in the center of Craw once. She didn't live there all the time. But I said, well, maybe we ought to elect Ruby Fords, you know, or Crawbat. We were going to elect a queen, you know. And Cecil got a big kick, and Albert Dean and me and Ishmael Follis and And we were going to elect the queen, but I said, well, you can't nominate Ruby. Well, she would never admit to living in Crawl.
That's the thing I've got from some people, is it?
She would never admit it.
They don't want to be associated with it.
No, she would never admit it, but they were a good family. There was 13 of those kids, see?
But one of the things that I picked up on is that it wasn't a neighborhood of just transients. You had people living there.
Oh, they stayed there. Yeah, they lived there. You had whites and blacks, and they fought all the time, you know, one
another.
They
was there.
But old Doolin Moss, and you've heard this guy writes about Doolin Moss, Paul, or what's his name, Thomas. Yep. He'll write about Doolin Moss was editor of State Journal one time.
Mm-hmm.
He owned half of the houses down in there.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you. A lot of those people were tenants and rented, right?
They rent them for $6 a month or maybe, you know. $6 a month then was a lot of money.
Yeah.
And Old
this
Man
would have
Krause,
been the 20s?
Or? Yeah, Old Man Krause and Doolin Moss owned most of them.
Well, did that sort of continue on? Did whites outside the area pretty much own most of those houses and rent them?
Yeah, they was all rentals. See, Miss Harp had rented, she lived at 773 and we lived at 775. And she had rented that house for 55 years.
Good.
And paid $15 a month, which, you know, you would say now, well, but when they were going to tear it down, see, these houses are built, but there used to be another logging company up here where the sand company is now,
yeah.
Godecky.
Yeah.
That was Congleton's lumber yard, see.
Mm-hmm.
That was a sawmill down there. It was all low. See, Godecky filled all of the end.
Okay.
But out of those, the lumber that they brought down there, all these houses were built along there, and they were built out of poplar. The one we had and one Miss Harf had was poplar. Even the weatherboarding was poplar, and the joists were poplar. These houses are last forever.
Well, I wondered, you know, with the floods coming up, and
but these were out of the water. See, they're on the other side, and
okay.
they were never in. At no time were they ever in the because they sit on that hill, you know. And
were
that's
they
where
set about the same place as the.
But down in the bottom area, what we call Crawl, those houses, every time the water came up, very much they was in the water.
One of the things I'm having trouble with is the exact boundaries of Crawl. Is it Kentucky River on the west, Fort Hill on the north, Broadway on the south, and how far over east?
Well, we come up to the State House Yard.
State House Yard would be.
That was Madison Street. It's no longer there.
Mm-hmm.
But across the street from it, it's still part of Crawl because there was some old ladies over there run a restaurant there, and they make, I don't know where you know what tripe is.
No.
Tripe is back in the days when John Paulus, before he got killed, they had, you ever hear of county court day?
Sure, I've heard of that.
They had county court day. See, and they might designate it, and right there by John Paulus's was, it was there a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And it was also right in front of the plaza there, where you go into the new hotel.
Yeah.
That area from Broadway down to Clinton Street was the county court day, or it might be on Clinton Street from there to the river. See, then at the end of Clinton Street was a dump, the first dump I can remember.
Oh.
See, they got all filled where the river, where the bridge is now coming back over.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, you went down there and they dumped and they filled all that up. To the left of that was Sullivan's Mill, which made chairs.
Furniture mill.
Furniture. Mill. To the left of that was Kenny's Mill, what they call Kenny's Mill. He sold coal,
mm-hmm.
and he had lumber, and this was Tom Kenny, see? Mm-hmm. And, of course, that was all the same lot of the lumber, Sullivan Furniture Place, see? See, mm-hmm. Kentucky Truck Line was in there later, but that used to be, that big building was a mill. And a lot of these people, like Guy Quar and Ernie Quar and a lot of Wilkson Street people and Crawbat people worked there. They made
the
furniture. They made the furniture.
That was one of the things, it's been presented to me, a lot of those people was on public assistance or welfare in the later years, but I'm not so sure that's right. It sounds like what you're telling me is that they were either distillery people or furniture makers.
Yeah,
or
then this is the old Kentucky River Mill right here. A lot of them worked here.
The old hemp mill.
The old hemp factory. See, that block building over there was the office.
Was that blacks and whites or just the whites that was working at them places?
I don't ever many. There weren't very many blacks, if any. I never seen a black work at the hemp factory.
What
my grandmother worked there, and all the deans said, this is Lee's Town Road, and that's Lee's Town. It was the old hemp factory hill, was Lee's Town.
Mm-hmm.
And all those buildings, see, this used to be, they leased that land along, you have to lease it. I don't think you can own it. I'm surprised that there's some, it's for sale now, and Ratcliffe's got it. But all I can remember, that they didn't even own those houses. The old mm-hmm. Kentucky River Mills owned it.
And they rented the house.
And there was a mansion on top over there where the superintendent, everywhere he was, he would come from Georgia. But we used to have a Mr. Johnson from up on St. Clair Street. He was superintendent there for years. But the superintendent always lived in that big mansion that you can look right up the river. Now it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
And all the houses there, I bet there's 1, 2, 3, 4, about 8 houses
they're
up on that hill. They've all been torn down, yeah. But they belong to the old Kentucky River Mill.
Well, when you talk about Bottom, was it a slum?
Oh, yeah, it was a slum area, you know. Most all those people would go, like, Salvation Army and, you know, and get their, like, Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the Elks Club or something would sponsor things for Christmas for kids. And I remember the Wilkinson Street School, every time Gip Graham would give everybody a 50 cent or a silver dollar every
Who
year.
Who was Gip Graham?
He was over the school board some way, and he was on the board of education, and they called him Gip Graham as well. And they used to live up by Harrod's Funeral Home. Just live in that area right there.
Mm-hmm.
And he was on the board of education for years. But see, Miss Shaw, there was Miss Shaw and Miss Penn, Henrietta Penn, was that her name? Yeah. That were the teachers when they had it on that corner. And also when they moved it into the old Weber house, which was on Wilkinson Street further down, after they made that into Mayo Underwood School, see. Mm-hmm. This guy that runs the this housing thing right here, see, his office is right there.
Mike Fields.
See, yeah. They lived on Washington Street. His grandparents did.
Yeah.
See, his uncle, who was Charlie Fields, was an All-American high school basketball player.
Oh.
And he had another, and he had a brother named Jimmy, and Ike Field is this one's daddy, see?
Isaac. As a matter of fact, I'm supposed to go over and talk to Isaac.
Isaac, see, they lived on Washington Street, right back of Frog Woods Grocery, see? Frog Woods.
I haven't heard of that one.
Well, he's right on the corner of Miro and Washington.
Okay.
See, he had groceries on there first, and this would be right across. It would be diagonally from the Tiger Inn, see?
Okay.
See, there was the Tiger Inn, and there was another grocery. The old guy's house was on this corner. And then, of course, Ms. Alice Samuels lived next to the guy's house, going almost to the center of Crawl, see?
Okay.
Now, Alice Samuels was a class woman, you know. She was superintendent of the Mayo Underwood, I mean the school down there, Yeah, Alice Samuels was the first superintendent of that school.
Alice Samuels,
and she just died not very long ago.
Oh, okay.
And they lived probably like, let's see, I think of the numbers, about 500 and, see, that side of the street's odd numbers. On this,
okay.
See, Ms. Fall 701.
Okay.
Well, that's a 700 block, so she lived in a 500 block. So she lived like 516 or something like that.
Washington now? 516 Washington?
It's about like that, yeah.
Okay.
About that number. Because, see, the old guy's house, they called it, took care of a quarter of the block. See, from, say, 516 on, it was all the old guy's house.
Well, were they using that for a gas house when making gas when you were?
Well, I can't ever remember them making gas, but say they used to have gas, you know, lights.
Yeah, coal gasification.
Yeah, that's where the old guy's house was, you know. Because I remember my grandmother, they had what they call a mantle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'd light it, and that's better than a coal owl light, you know. It made a brighter light.
Well, let me ask you.
All those people down there had gas lights, and not many of them had, they had some toilets, but
most outdoors.
They didn't have no, they had those type of flush toilets you would sit on, and while you was sitting on, the tank fills up, see?
Ah, no, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and then it would be an outside as a rule, and then it would flush it. Now, not all of them had much water. They had one spigot outside, you know, and maybe water wasn't but $1 a month to the who owned the land. But see, maybe two or three families will eat out of that, use that same spigot.
You know, it's funny you telling me that, because I've been looking at the old records, and they did a survey in 56 or 7, and that's the exact same thing. Most of the houses, very few had indoor cold water. Most of them didn't even have indoor plumbing.
No, and, they didn't.
But
I remember when I came to my grandmother's, we had to go out back into a, well, it was part of the house, but it wasn't in the house.
Now, where was your grandmother's? Was
now, she lived across from Miss Fowler's.
On the east side of Wilkinson, yeah, riverside of Wilkinson.
Yeah, on the riverside, see.
Okay.
She lived at, wasn't quite that far down, so it was in the 600 block, see.
Okay.
I would say 628 or something like that.
Well, let me ask you about a few of the businesses, like the Tiger Inn. Was that just a restaurant? I've heard.
No, they had sandwiches, and they had a pool table in there, and they would dance and have Nickelodeons, you know.
Yeah.
And dance. And then the Blackhead Inn was that way. But the Blackhead Inn was worse.
I've heard of that.
It was low class. Well, it was right, see, John Fowler's on, his building at Burnt Dam was on the corner of Clinton and Washington, and that would be the southwest corner.
Okay.
But back right side of where that burnt down was the Black Cat Inn, see, right back up on Washington Street.
Mm-hmm.
And the next one up was Alec Gordon, and before him it was Deacon Pickle Wilson, I remember running it. And then on the other corner was Cy Kearns. See, this one had burnt down. Diagonally, there was a Lum and Abner store. Mm-hmm. You ever hear of Lum and Abner?
No.
Well, it's like, they had Amos and Andy a long time ago, remember?
Yes, sure, I remember Amos and Andy.
Yeah, Lum and Abner was like Amos and Andy, but they were on radio. Oh. Well, then they started having stores. They called Lum and Abner store.
Was it just like
Old Man Sullivan running?
Grocery, or?
It was a grocery, yeah.
Ah, okay.
Now, it was on the...
when would this have been, in the 20s again?
Well, this is late, see. This was probably in the 40s, when the Lum and Abner store. That was after John Fowler's got killed, see. Because that was just a house when John Fowler's got killed. But on the other corner was a big stone building right across the street.
Would that have been the Odd Fellows building?
Well, I don't know who's there now, but it's the old man, Dr. E.E. Underwood, who was the only black physician that I can remember at that time.
Ah, okay.
And his office was upstairs, and this was had a pool hall in it downstairs, and it was like a store. Upstairs were the, this is on
the cut stone building, was it?
It was a stone building.
Yeah.
It was.
There used to be a place called the People's Pharmacy. I don't know if you ever heard of it. It was a black pharmacy, and I'll bet you Dr. Underwood was somehow...
Yeah, well, he was up over top of it, see.
Oh,
his
okay.
office was, and he was one of the few black doctors that would make house calls, you know. And
Did he serve mainly just the crawbats and
anybody. He had no preference, and you could go up there in white or black. And matter of fact, I think I've been to him.
Oh, really? He was the only black professional.
Yeah, see,
physician.
That's when you see when you come from the old state house on that side, you would come down out from Madison Avenue and turn that be down the corner from in Washington on that. I would call it the east and then the southeast corner, see?
Okay.
It's on the southeast corner. And, he was one of the fine doctors, and I can remember him smoking them damn cigars. I can still smell the cigar. He reminded me of Charlie Sifford, if you know him. He plays golf, this big black guy, always got a cigar in his mouth and flops around. Well, Dr. Underwood did that way, and he had a car, you know.
Well, did they name Underwood, Mayo Underwood, after him?
I think that's where
they got
Underwood. And I see his name up around that church that's right on the corner of Lewis Street and Clinton, you know, right across the old Model Laundry.
Oh, yeah, the St. John's AME.
Yeah, that's Model Laundry was on this side, see.
Uh-huh.
Well, see, then when you get down the next corner, that is St. Clair. As you go down, all the houses on that side now is the... Well, you got that Farnham Dungeon, the sports center there.
Yeah.
Well, on that corner, very corner, was the old Robb Funeral Home.
Well, I've heard. Tell me about the Robb Funeral Home.
Thomas Robb. They had one boy that was almost white, and he was trouble, always in trouble. But he was a white, black guy.
Okay.
And I don't know. I've heard he always was a queer, and he had killed some women, and he could. And of course, Robb could really play the piano. But they had this one boy that I don't know where he was theirs or not, but he looked white to me. See, and
that funeral home is mentioned as late as the 50s.
Oh yeah, that was there. That was on the main office was on the corner, but then the funeral home was right back of that on Clinton Street, on down towards the Sports Center. Then behind that was the Sam Schiller Junkyard, and you probably heard of Sam Schiller's Junkyard.
No, I haven't heard.
But that wasn't always his. See, before him, it was B. Moore's Coal Yards. See, an old man, Howard Cox worked for him. They had mules, and they hauled coal around. And Howard Cox worked for them, and they had mules and wagons. And that's the way they did it in the old days. That's the reason I'm telling you, they, in that same area also, they had county court day. And then, of course, the most notorious county court guy was Jess Neal. Because, you know, he was the biggest cheat of all. But those old horse traders, that's the way they do. They say, boy, they said, look at this horse, you know, and you never let you see but one side of him. They keep turning him around as you looking at him. You think you're looking at the other side. not a blemish on him.
Well, let me ask you something. I've heard that Crawl was a violent place, a place of gambling and prostitution.
Well,
and
it was.
Was it really?
Yeah, they had a lot of wild women. Peggy Davis came from, you know, I don't know why I get in trouble mentioning names.
Well, they're all long gone, I'm sure.
I don't think Peggy Davis is dead. I don't know. But she came from the mountain somewhere, and then there's one girl they called Mountain Mary, and of course, Ellie Gordon's woman was Vivian Harper, you know, and he kept her for years, and I know he's dead now, but he's got a daughter that lives on, I don't know where his daughter's granddaughter lives on Miro Street yet, where Goble Gill used to live. See, that used to belong to my aunt, and they left it to my sister, and then they sold it to Tom Harp. And,
well, why was it violent? Was it just the class of people that was there? Or?
Well, they would sell beer, you know. We got to think, there's the Blue Moon. See, that popped up in the 50s. We talking about the Blue Moon.
Where
after
was Blue Moon located?
Well, see, I tell you, I'm false on the corner. The next building on Clinton Street towards the river was the Blue Moon. And that's where Peggy Davis and, of course, Mountain Mary and Lucille Downey and
number of individuals made their living there. I heard that the mountain men would, this is back in the teens and 20s.
Yeah, they'd get to dancing. They had those Nickelodeons, you know. And, of course, the idea of the women is to make them put as many nickels in them. And then, of course, they sold beer. Beer was legal.
Okay.
Tommy Spaulding run a joint right across the street. And this is on the other side from there. There used to be a two-story building over there. This was almost on the corner of Center.
Okay.
See, when you come down Broadway till, say you get halfway down, there was Center Street. Well, down that in that alley, see, now when you get on down to the corner of Center and Clinton Street, this is where John Fawless got killed. This was actually the building. I was telling you that he had gone to bed, but he had to walk half a block down and a half a block up. And they was in Ed Fensel's. See, there was some old meat markets down in there, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. See, Fensel's run the meat market. Well, this was Ed Fensel's place. See, John wasn't, they didn't go in the Peachtree where he run. They went, walked Fensel's down the corner. But, and the way I understood it, in the back of, when you go into Fensel's, of course, it's like the old saloon. In the back room, there's always a gambling table. See, that's where they had them, but you sold your beer and liquors out front, you wasn't allowed to sell liquors because it was illegal at that time, but they sold moonshine liquors, you know.
So,
but anyhow, this Rigsby, I understand, cheated on purpose. And John Fawless reached over and whops him one. But he's got the gun out under here and pulls the trigger. John Paulus jumps up and reaches for his gun, but he doesn't even have it with him. Then the guy poured two or three more into him, see. And
so now, he was actually playing cards.
It was murder. It was murder. It was set up. And
well, did the police fear coming down into Craw? Or
well, if they did, if they'd come, they'd just go through. They'd stop.
So they really did.
But that's what I was telling you. He had an air about him, you know, that they knew that they better not. They could come down there as long as they stayed in line and didn't try to interfere
to do
with
anything.
But they were the law, and he respected the law, but he well, did so like he wanted to do.
Sounds like he was a man of political influence.
Yeah,
too.
He was, and everybody respected John Paul. I don't know of anybody who could say much. And I tell you, who can tell you much about him as anybody. And you probably read some of her articles in the State Journal. It's Thelma Willis or Thelma Grimes.
Thelma Grimes?
Yeah, she was a Willis, you know. And I was telling you about Tommy Spaulding. He married her sister, and he's the one that... Tommy's dead now, but he was a good guy. But Thelma Grimes can remember probably. She used to live down there. She lives, I don't know where, she moved to Bell Point, but I don't know where she lives now. But well, she is T. Grimes' wife. They used to run a grocery. T. Grimes used to run a grocery, but Edmund Grimes would be his.
They had
name.
A grocery down in Craw?
Well, no, they had a grocery on Wilkinson Street one time down here. Mm-hmm. Almost where well, this side of where the sand place is now, on this side of the river.
Okay.
But see, he worked at Hale's Grocery over in Bell Point when he was a kid, delivering groceries with a bicycle when he was a kid. And they delivered groceries with a bicycle. There were several groceries in Bell Point. About four, I think, Montgomery's, and Hales had two, I think, and a guy named Nick Rogers had a grocery over there. And,
well, let me read you a few names that I've unearthed that maybe you, if you recognize, Will Castleman. Have you heard of a Will Castleman? Castilman.
No, that doesn't ring a bell.
Jack Robb.
Oh, yeah, Jack Robb is
the man you were telling me about.
Yeah.
He had the son who was almost one.
Yeah, he is the one that run the... And then I was going, yeah, and that's where the coal company was later, you know. And,
Dr. Mayo of Mayo Underwood, I guess.
Yeah, I know. But I just know of him. You know.
The Reverend W.R. Hutchinson of the First Baptist Church there on Clinton Street.
Oh, yeah, I remember him, yeah.
His name is mentioned.
Wasn't on Clinton, was it? Oh, yeah, you're right.
Now, Corinthian Baptist was over on Miro.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And there was a Reverend James Richardson over there.
Now, there was a Tubby Marshall that used to live right across from Peachtree Inn, and he was an All-American football player at Kentucky State. Uh-huh. But this is back, like, in the 20s, late 20s. See?
Would his son, or maybe kin to him, be Joe Marshall?
I don't know. I do know it's Joe, but I don't know their name. I knew that they had several, and these were what they... Well, Happy Chandler calls them high yellows.
That sounds
That's
like
what he calls them.
A Happy Chandler, isn't
Yeah, he calls them high yellows.
The man who works for us, Joe Marshall, used to box around a little bit professionally, and very athletic, very big man. So I wonder if he couldn't be the son of this Tubby Marshall.
Yeah, he could be. Yeah, Tubby was a... Tubby, I don't know Tubby's right name, but I know him, and I know him. Well, he may be dead now, but his wife was a right nice looking. But they live across from the Peachtree Inn, one of them, on Washington Street.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you, I know it's getting late, and I'll ask just a few questions. And this is more on the slum clearance project, so you may not have any memories of it, but let me run through these, and then I'll leave you in peace, because you've been awful good. Do you know where the idea came from to clear out the Craw and build, you know, to remove the houses and the residents offhand? Do you know where the slum clearance project, whose idea it was?
Well, I think maybe Mayor, Bob Yunch, you know.
Yeah.
See, I know his family real well. See, Bob Yunch, I remember his dad, Roy Yunch. See, they owned a lot of property, too, and they rented to the poor class of people. and Ms. Yunt done all the collecting. And
well, I've read some newspaper articles where Mayor Yunt was speaking out very strongly in favor of this project. And when John Gerard was there,
John Gerard used to be the mayor of Frankfort, and they were the one that started the cable system in Frankfort, see.
Oh, really, John?
Yeah, I think he had a used furniture, not a used furniture, but he started a furniture store.
Well, I know, and John was very supportive of this project.
Yeah, he was a couple of mayors. I would expect he had as much to do with it. I would think more so than Yunt, you know. Yeah, of course, they've named this bridge Yunt Bridge, you know.
In his honor.
But see, they lived out of Benson, see. I know their exact location when they were kids, see, and I was a kid, that there was Omis Yunt and Roy Yunt, and he built that Bailey's at Mill, Yunt's Mill, around on Taylor Avenue.
Yeah.
That mill. He
sets
built that.
There were devils all coming.
He
down.
Actually built that house that sits next door to it, and dug that stuff out himself. And that's Roy Yunt, see. That would be Bob Yunt's dad, see. And he had a son named Bill, Willie, or William, I call him. And Jimmy still, he still owns a garage on Miro Street. But
I know Mr. Yunt that used, is it Jimmy that used to work at the garage there?
Yeah, he owns a garage.
Now, there was, is he still applying his trade there, or has he sold that garage?
Well, he just worked for, he'd do some people he knew about all he would do. And he, if there's any...
It's right there at the corner of Lewis and Miro.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. See,
he only worked on American.
Right across the street is where Elliot Gordon, see, his daughter lives right across the street. That's where my aunt, Bertha Gill and Goble Gill live there. But right now, Tom Harp lives there, and that's Elliot Gordon. Her name is, I can't think of her name. But see, I remember Elliot Jr., and there was another girl. I was telling you about old man Krause owned all those houses in that area, and old man Doolin Mall. See, they would fix them up anyway. They would use lumber or anything and build a shack and just rent it for $6 a month.
They probably made out pretty good.
Oh, yeah, they made anything they made, because they would use, like, Bob Schweitzer and Huey Clark and people to build these houses that were just jack-legged carpenters, and these people would keep it up, and they would have any plumbing in them, maybe a outdoor toilet, you know. This is back when you didn't have to have any restrictions on building.
No
codes,
zonings.
No voting. Yeah.
Building standards.
Because I remember I was telling you about Tommy Spaulding. He run that Spaulding's Inn, which was across from Blue Moon, and he was bad as any. He was a good guy. He loved baseball. He taught me to pitch baseball. He could really pitch because he lost both legs later on. Had a brother named Charlie Pooh Spaulding, probably the best catcher that Frankfort ever had, baseball catcher. You know, we talk about Bill Fulham and Floyd.
A lot of athletes came out of that area.
Floyd Crane, see, the Betty. He's a cousin to Betty. Matter of fact, Miss Wallace and Lewis Crane, who was her brother, was they had 13 children. Have you ever been to the Pink Pig?
Yeah, sure.
Do you know
Clayton Bradley and...
Clayton? Would you believe Clayton? Her mother and her daddy came from right up here.
Ah.
That Floyd Crane's brother was her daddy, see?
Ah, okay. No, now I didn't know she was a Crane.
Well, she originally was a Crane, see?
Ah, no.
She married Scotty, you know.
Yeah.
And her name is Clayton, and she's the one that wants me to make a recording, because I know Bronson Crane, and see, they was a huge family of them. It was Bob and Bronson and Nevita and Clarence and Floyd and Eugene and Edgar. And
all in one family?
All in one family. They were all the same family, like from like Betty's, Miss Fowler. See, she had a lot of children, but not many of them lived.
Well, she had, according to that little thing I brought in, 13, but only five of them lived.
Well, let's see. There was Carlos and Wisey and Bixie and Anna Lee and Ishmael. Maybe that's all.
Might have been more, because I...
There was a lot more. That's the only living children. And then I had another brother named Andy Crane that lived on, it'd be right across my plaza. He was in World War I. And if you wanted to hear about World War One, you just have to stand there on a corner in Andy Green. You could hear him from one end to the other. And he was Miss Foss's brother also. And they said he could tell some whoppers, all right. Yeah, he could tell a lot of whoppers.
One more question, I'll leave you in peace. When you heard about the slum clearance project, right, where you read about it or somebody told you, what was your reaction to
well,
the thought of it?
You know, it's bound to be for the better, you know, because the people were living under poverty conditions, you know, and there was Eva Cox, I don't know if you ever heard this name. She lives right where you go in the plaza. Okay. There were two shacks there, and she had dogs and cats, must have had 50 of them. And my Swiss sister used to go there and talk to her once in a while. But she swore she had a cat that could play the piano. But she only had, I think she wore all the clothes that she had. You know, and Eva, and she sold, you remember, I don't know where you remember the tickets, not the ball tickets.
Baseball
tickets. You'd get a book and you'd sell them. And like you sold it for $12, and you may get four of it. See, she mm-hmm. said, well, she'd tell you tickets, and if
that's how she made her living?
She made her living like that. I don't know what else she did, but she wore an old colored lady, and she had two shacks in that lot there. And it's just, it was in the middle between Miro and Clinton, exact middle. Well, that's where the hotel is.
Ah, okay.
And I'll tell you, somebody else is that lived next door to her, and she's still living is Elsie Thurman, Elsie Smith now. She lived next door to her.
Would
see?
She be a good person maybe to talk
yeah,
to?
Yeah, Elsie Smith could remember about, particularly about Eva Cox woman. And Frogwoods Grocery, because see, he built another store across the street from
who
there.
Who owned Frogwoods? Was that...
Well, Frog Woods owned his own.
He owned
his own store.
Oh, Frog Woods.
Frog Wood has a store. See, I told you he had it on the corner of Miro and Washington. But he also built one on Wilkinson Street later. Uh-huh. He built it himself out of block. And,
I see. I didn't realize Frog was a nickname for him.
I don't know what his name was. Do you?
I can't remember his. I ought to, probably. But he was he was a good businessman. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you another thing that's not in that deal is Rupert's Grocery is right where the YMCA is now when you went down Broadway, like when you first go down Broadway down to the trestle.
Yeah.
About the third door down was a wholesale grocery.
Ah, okay.
They sold groceries to everybody in the county. See, it was Rupert's Wholesale Grocery. Yeah.
Were they still in business as late as the 40s and 50s?
Pardon?
Were they still in business as late as the 40s?
Rupert's, I don't know. I believe they went out in the 30s. I'm almost sure they did. But they were a wholesale grocery, but that was on Broadway. And then, of course, you know, when you got past them, it was one more store, and then you went down Center Street. And another old grocery was down there on the corner of Miro and Center Street. See, and that's on the other end.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Now, you're coming out to go across the bridge, but right in the middle of that block was mm-hmm. Center Street. Then when you went across the street, you run into Blanton Street.
Yeah, I know Blanton.
And then that's on the corner, that's where Mayo Underwood is. But on this corner was Billy Dean's Grocery. Now, he's a guy that looked like W.C. Fields. If you remember W.C.
Yes,
Fields.
Yes, oh yes, my little chickadee.
You would think he looked just like him. He had a big strawberry nose. And he had some groceries. You'd go in there and buy penny candy, you know, like penny suckers.
Back in the 20s and 30s.
And I guess he lived about the 40s. But he had maybe six or eight children, and they lived on Wilson Street in the 700 block, almost 800 block.
So the businesses I'm hearing you talk about are mainly groceries, saloons, junkyard, Rob's.
Well, Billy Dean was, he kept a woman the whole time besides his regular wife. He had one all the time. And in the back, he was a bootlegger too. Now, the back end, but sometimes these groceries are fronts.
Mm-hmm.
See, like John Foss.
The real business is in the
back. Yeah, and Ms. Foss said he has come down and actually he would have a bushel basket of money and just take it up the street in a bushel basket, you know, and then no fear or nothing.
Nobody's going
to
touch you.
Ain't nobody going to bother John Fowler, but he'd go to the bank with the money in a bushel basket just walking up the street. She tells that, and I'm sure she's right.
Why did she stay with him if they were so different?
Well, you know, he was too high strung for her, I believe. You know, she was too religious.
I guess she wouldn't have never considered divorce, and that would have been against her.
No, I don't think it was ever. You see, now they buried him in Frankfort Cemetery,
yeah.
And I remember him being laid out at the house, though. I was always scared in that room, with, and he's dead, see? Yeah. But I knew what he did, because many of us would go up through there, and he'd say, Papa, give us a dime. We, you know, you go to show for a dime. You go to any movie for a dime when you were a kid.
Yeah.
And he'd give us a dollar a piece, but he'd kick your butt and say, get your butt out of this bottom and stay out of it. That's the way he'd say it.
And, he didn't want his
but
children.
We'd be back, don't you think we would? Well, when you got a dollar then, it's like, and get $20 now.
Oh,
see, you could buy three bars of candy for a dime. And
so you all was rich with your
when
dollar.
When you got a dollar, you were set up.
So you'd go to the show and come back down to the...
Yeah.
I guess he's afraid you'd spend
no,
the money.
No, we wouldn't. Not that day.
Here's some pictures that when we moved Grandpa Foss. It was Bixie's idea.
See, I was saying they buried him in the Franklin Cemetery.
This is after they... That's his...
And he is buried...
Steel vault and all.
See, Miss Foss wouldn't want him. They buried him together. See, Bixie moved him. But she wouldn't have wanted that.
I don't know where she was or not, but she found out we had lots. In
we had lots up there. See, they buried there next to our lots. And I don't want to be there either.
So they moved him from Sunset to...
No, they moved him from Frankfort Cemetery to Sunset.
He's been buried for...
But you know that vault? They said when they picked the handles up that it would still work.
Good grief. That is a massive looking thing.
Yeah, that's see, that's the vault.
You can't... Well,
see, Bixie had that done. He wanted to put them together.
Yeah.
And that probably cost him a lot of money. But he said those handles would still work on that thing. You know, where you lift it by.
Yeah.
And you'd think they'd be rusty. But see, I think it was copper or something. And the casket was, too. But this is where they... Now, this is Sunset. This is where he is now. Bixie decided to do that. His name is Benjamin Franklin Foss, and Ishmael's name is Ishmael Williams. See, Ishmael is a tribe, the Ishmaelites. That's where you see Miss Foss gets all these. Of course, John was the second son.
Mm-hmm. There's a story in the newspaper where Bixie got in a fight one time down in Craw. It's in the apparently someone shoved. I guess it was his first wife, maybe shoved her, black woman shoved her, and got in a fight, and Bixie got hit over the head with a shovel.
Some nigger, black guy, they say niggers. Yeah. That's what we call them. They expected to be called niggers, you know.
Apparently, they got into it, and there was, the police went into it, and
He got shot by the fire chief once, too.
He did,
the fire
Bixie?
Chief shot his spleen into, yeah. Conway, see, the fire department, when they first had it, was up on Main Street, right where Scott's Furniture was.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's what's in there now. Anyway, it's.
Well, why would the fire? Bixie was working for the fire department.
I don't know him. His name was Conway, you know. Chief, he was an old guy.
Yeah, and he shot
And Bixie, Bixie. Yeah, he shot him.
They got into an argument over toys, you know.
Oh, those toys. Bixie fixed the toys for kids. He loved to fix toys for kids.
And some way they got, that was before I came here, but they got in an argument over toys.
And he shot him.
Shot his
spleen into. He didn't have any spleen when he died.
But he recuperated from that shooting.
Yeah. That was good golly. He lived
the fire department after that.
20 or 30 years because he was over to the fire department he got now, you know, over in South Frankfort. Or
it was about the toys, wasn't it?
Yeah. See, that used to be Orville Harris. That used to be Frankfort Buick. Where the
Bixie, though, when he was in that train wreck, he was in the CB. That hurt his spleen, didn't it?
Yeah, but he Conway shot his spleen. He hurt his back when he was in. Bixie was in the CBs, and when they was coming home one time, they had a terrible wreck, and he got a pension out of that, you know. And he had a.
One of the stories I hear about John, his father was. He was a veteran of the Spanish American.
Oh yeah, his father's got a. She got a pension from the Spanish American.
He got pushed off a train or something and hurt his knee.
I don't know.
Yeah, like I'm telling you, he had an air of Errol Flynn in him.
He
did.
Sure did.
Yeah.
And there ought to be Spanish American War records kept on each veteran that ought to have some information.
Yeah, I know that she got a pension all her life.
Yeah,
from the time he died. So that's the reason I just think they never, If they ever divorced, I didn't know about it.
Well, I don't think they did.
She sounds too religious.
But
to even
Ben Conaway could tell more stories about John Paulus, because he died, and he used to be over the fire department, and he could get, if he gave you this history, it would be pretty accurate.
This is a Bible we gave Granny one Christmas in '67, and she wrote the names of all of her children down. She wrote that Clarence Edwards, Leona May, and Carlos Russell, John Jr. Now that he was named after John Paul, and Ann Lee was my
See, that's the reason I say and his Victory name is Carlos Collins, Russell.
Edward.
I mean John
Edward,
Russell. I think
Marvin Richard.
I think you're right. Marvin Richard.
Now Bexy's boy was named Marvin Richard too, wasn't he? And Carnell. And Elmer Ophelia. I don't know where they're
Ophelia,
gonna,
yeah.
Uh-huh. And Earl.
Earl.
Is that Follis?
Yeah, it's an A. She didn't close the loop there.
Yeah. Benjamin. And I wrote this down. This is when Bixie died, and this is when Carlos died.
Well, see, Carlos was a representative one time.
Well, that's what your wife was telling me, that he was in politics.
He'd been a magistrate. Where he was running for
He's a Boy Scout leader for years. So they were all pretty good people, yeah. You know.
I've heard of a young man, I met him, a Scotty Follis.
Well, that's Ishmael's son.
Ishmael's boy.
Ah, okay.
He's a major.
He's in California now.
He's a major. Or is up for major.
Up for major.
Maybe a colonel.
Mother last
Lieutenant
week.
Lieutenant colonel, I believe.
What age of a, would he be in his late 20s or 30s? Mm-hmm.
He'd be in his 30s, I think.
Yeah, I think he'd be in his 30s now. He's in Chicago, isn't he?
No, he's in California.
He's in California. He was in Chicago.
I met a Scotty Follis who was laying carpet. And this has been 4 or 5 years.
Oh, Bill Follis.
Oh.
And Ted.
Yeah, Ted and Bill. They
laid carpet.
See, Ted. Now, Bill. Okay. Ted Follis was a good boxer. He was a champion boxer in our regiment in the 8th Division.
Ah, okay.
Granny says he was married to my husband for 24 years, the mother of 13 children. She wrote that. I knew she had 13 children. She didn't raise all of them.
So she must have married him about 1905 then, because he was.
Well, now this was 1967 when we gave her the book, because she wanted a Bible that had big print, you know.
Well, there's one other Follis story where he was at a polling station on voting day and somebody shot at him, and he returned fire and his shot went astray and killed a man who was at the voting booth. And that's in the little handout. Have you ever heard?
I haven't read that. I haven't heard.
I've heard he killed a guy that was kind of accidental.
A friend of his, really. Mm-hmm. It was an accident.
Yeah,
and that grieved him quite a bit.
Yeah, well, see, they use that story. There has been a polling place for years, you know.
Oh, his store had
his
been?
Store, yeah. Then, of course, they had them different places. But that I remember when that had been a polling area. Yeah.
Well, you'll have to read this little thing I dropped off, because I think it might either have some stories you're not aware of or confirm some that you're
aware. Well, it would take forever to tell all the stories about these ladies of evening. Peggy Davis and all these Mountain Mary and Edith Long, and she's Arthur Long. It's the car salesman. His sister was named Ether. Her name was Edith Long.
But she's
then
not.
There was Peggy Davis, and there was Helen King, and.
Were they generally kept by the saloon men, or?
Yeah, they would stay at a certain, like in Beach Tree Inn. He'd have so many. Well, Harvey Sarvin and Grace Sarvin run the Blue Moon.
Ah, okay.
See, that's Harvey Sarvin, S-A-R-V-I-N, I believe. And then her name was Grace.
Were they white or black, the Sarvins?
They
were white.
They were white.
They were white.
They were white. The Black Cat Inn was run by, Black Cat was his name. I can't remember his last name, but I know him.
Ah.
You know, when he had the Black Cat Inn. And, of course, the Tiger Inn was a little gentler. Because it was on the corner of Miro and
right across from the school, really.
On the corner from the school. Same side of the school, only it's a half a block between them, and that's down on the corner.
But Blue Moon was rough? Or was it?
Blue Moon was rough. Okay. They danced half the
Can
night.
Can you describe how it looked? I mean.
Oh, well, you'd have a bunch of booths, and you'd have a dance floor in there, you know, and you may have an upstairs for the ladies of the evening to go. And they would have a bar, you know, where they'd sell beer. And the girls, their object, see, like Tommy Spaulding would have them in there and try to have good-looking women to draw them in. And their idea is to get you to put nickels in the
Nickelodeon
and buy beer. See, beer. See, he would sell beer twice what it's worth. Three times, see, but they would buy it, see. And
well, was the customers mostly just local residents? Or
no, they would come from Eminence and Henry County and Lawrenceburg. See, Frankfort was the center of all this stuff, and Shelbyville, and they would come from all around, Georgetown.
So this area was sort of unique as far as the services it could
provide.
Especially
from the Ball Knob area, see, they'd come see Eminence is that way, and Newcastle.
Sort of a regional sin center, I guess.
Yeah, and that's where they'd come, to the bottom, see, because you get away with everything out there, see, and they'd be out on the street drunk at night, 2 o'clock in the morning, and half the night, you know. Then they'd end up sleeping together, you know, or something, and they'd roll them. So they spoke, you know, the women would roll them in, that's what they call it, you know.
Take
they
the money off.
Money, yeah. Get them drunk and roll them. Then they disappear.
Yeah, well, what are you going to do? Nothing, because you weren't supposed to be there.
I don't know what happened to it, you know.
Yeah, there's nothing that could be done after you...
But this was like the Blue Moon. Now, the Blue Moon has been two places. The Blue Moon has also been on Wilkinson Street one. Later, after that was destroyed, they moved around on... just below where the YMCA is now, on the first block, coming down from Broadway down to Clinton Street. Jack Rice and them used to live there. And this was a double building, like it had a building, then you go upstairs, and it was a connection, and was driving in between them. But the Blue Moon part had been a gross. Miss Rice used, I remember when she lived there years and years ago, Jack and Henry. I mean, there's a, you know Gordon Taylor?
Sure.
Well, his wife is a Hutchison.
Okay.
Now, Ms. Rice's prettiest daughter was named Rosie.
Okay.
And Everett Hutchison married Rosie. And this girl, Joan or Judy, what her name is Gordon Taylor's wife, is her daughter, see? And that was the second Blue Moon, but of course, She has no knowledge or no remembrance of that, but that's where she came from. See, she's Jack, it was Jack Rice, and Ms. Rice had a, they were kin to the Harps. There was Sam Harp, that I used to be on baseball with Sam, with John Fallis. He was a guy that couldn't hardly read his name, but he could tell you, anybody you name, he would tell you what their batting average was.
Fallis or Harp?
Harp. Sam Harp. He could remember the cards you played yesterday.
He was so one of photographic memory.
Everybody wanted Sam Harp to play cards for him. They'd sponsor him.
Because he had some.
He remembered every card everybody played. Every card. And he could remember what you played yesterday. That's what was amazing about him. And the guy could walk. They had a Sleepy Hollow. It used to be you go out to Lawrenceburg Road. See, that's the only way you get out there. I used to live out to Lawrenceburg Road, out where, Bramlett used to live, on the Bramlett farm. Now there's a, out there, there's a bowling alley on the left, but right across, that's where we lived years and years ago.
Well, how long have y'all been here now since the...
This place, we've been here since 54.
54, okay.
Yeah, right here, see, because I've lived up the street, and I've lived in out to, in Ball Knob area, and when I was a kid. And then we lived two different places. I used to go to Bridgeport School, see, years ago. And of course, Ishmael, John Fallis' youngest son, would come out. We had horses and ponies, and he'd come out to ride them. And every time we'd come to town, we'd be close to them, see. And then, of course, I graduated from Frankfort High School, and I played football for him. And then I went to Eastern. But I remember old man Sullivan, see, that was the Lum and Abner store was old man Sullivan started, see. And he had a store on Wilson Street at 629. And that's where our oldest son was born there, Bruce, if you know Bruce.
Well, I've never met him, I know of
him. He's up at the bank, and of course he's a senior vice president, and he's up there with Gordon Taylor and him, you know. But anyhow, old man Sullivan, I painted a sign on it. So there ain't no doubt about this was the Lum and Abner store, because... See, when I was going to high school, I made extra money by painting signs. I was a good sign artist.
Yeah.
And I became one. From necessity, I reckon.
Did you, as far as work in your adult years, did you work for state or did
Oh, no, I was a power plant foreman at Granddad.
Oh, okay.
A foreman out there, and I run the power and heat department. And every pump, we had 100 pumps, all the fire system. The bottling house area, every pump that pumped whiskey was ours. Everything that pumped air was, I had to know about it. So
good grief, you had a
they
lot.
Called the power and heat department. Uh-huh. See, we were responsible for the boilers. The boilers, they were a couple of $1 million worth in boilers. So I knew how to pump. I know what made them tick, you know.
Well, you've given me a lot of time. I didn't mean to take up so much
I've
of your
been
time,
out there for 38 years, so I know how to make them work. See, Forrest Marshall was National Stiller sign painter. And he is probably the most accomplished artist that Kentucky's ever had.
What was the name again?
Forrest Marshall.
Forrest
you remember
Marshall.
Russ Marshall? It used to be a city engineer, city of Frankfort, probably the first city engineer they ever had.
And probably before my time. I didn't get here till 77.
Uh-huh. Well, anyhow, Russ is his brother, but Forrest was in the Marine Corps. And he was in the Pacific, see, and of course I was in Europe, and they would fly him over the islands, and they would reproduce the islands before they invaded them, see, mm-hmm. And they was in topography, and they would make this island up on a map, see, they would take photographs of it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Herman Blumenthal, who was the art director for 20th Century Fox, was in that outfit with him. He recognized Forrest had a rare talent, you know. And
Forrest went to work for 20th Century after?
No, they asked him. They came here after him, and he said, no, I'm satisfied doing it. He was a sign painter out of Granddad.